Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning, or what's left of it. Time permitting, text line 251-343-0106. Joining us now a couple of days early, but that's going to be calls. This is it. Last two segments of this week. State Senator Chris Elliott joins us, our returning champion here on the line. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. Thanks for letting me close out your week. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks for being flexible. I do appreciate it. I'll ask you this, and the Doug Jones announcement, and a lot of our friends in the media are very excited about this, but he will not be governor. But I do wonder what it could have a potential impact down ballot, especially with some of your colleagues' races. What do you think?
I think that's a fair statement. I mean, look, you're right. He's not going to be the governor. We've seen this exact matchup before. The issues haven't changed except for that. I think, Doug Jones is kind of let some of his true liberal colors show a little bit more than he may have previously since his defeat by Coach Tuberville last time around. And so I don't think those statements are going to bode well for him. Look, the Democrat Party's gone even further left, since that last matchup, and that hasn't changed. And so, that's just not going to go well for him. But it will give, those folks that are, hardcore Democrats and leftists in Alabama, some glimmer of some hope, I guess. And they'll turn out and turn out in these primaries and certainly turnout in the general is the name of the game. And so, you may see Democrats, putting a few more points on the board than they usually would. And in some of the more purple districts in certain areas, or the, federally re-gerrymandered districts, you may see a little bit more competition in the general than we normally would.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of wonder. But it's not going to chip away at. You're still going to have a super majority, I think.
Yeah, no question. I mean, a 27 seat, out of 35 seat majority in the Senate, that's huge, and I think that's indicative of just where the state is as a whole. And I think that you'll see something similar to that statewide as well.
Yeah, but it does mean that the Republicans are going to have to do a little more work. But he's already out there talking about things, and he did an interview with WHNT up in Huntsville, and the things he talked about, two things that stuck out to me, the clean lottery, which we know the politics there. I'd be curious to see how he thinks he's going to manage a Republican supermajority. Should he be, I guess if he wins, and you probably will have some other seats fall too. So who knows what the legislature would be like, but like I said, he's not going to be governor. But the second part of that, he's talking about the overtime tax. He's taking some of these Republican issues and going to use them. I don't know how effective that will be, but I think that's what lies ahead.
I mean, I think you're right, and I think we probably should have looked at extending the overtime tax. I thought Representative Daniels had a good thing going there, if for no other reason than to really control the growth of government. I understand, you brought Peter to pay Paul sometimes, and we were able to do some grocery tax cuts that we, may have been a little bit tighter on the budget if we hadn't taken that action. But I think that's something that Republicans are going to have to deal with. I think that there's an explanation there, but at the same time, it's a little bit tougher thing in general to talk about it. But we've got some huge wins too that, gosh, the Democrats are just going to have a hard time with. And, from seeing market changes and increases in education outcomes to tax cuts on groceries and just big wins that Democrats weren't able to ever do when they were in power. And then you layer the national politics on top of that, and and you say, hey, do you want the party of protecting, you know, narco terrorists to be, you know, the ones you're voting for, you know, the ones that are screaming, oh no, don't blow up the narco terrorists, you know, they're good people too. That's a horrible brand, and not something I think is going to play with Alabama voters.
Well, tell me about this, and this might be a question for some of your counterparts on, you know, ETF, but the Future to Choose Act and school choice, and I always hear this, and I believe that this will be, once this gets out of its sort of trial stage, it will be funded. What's the long-term outlook for school choice in Alabama?
Look, I think this is, you know, our first foray into what I will call real school choice, right? Senator Marsh and Senator Pittman pushed real hard the Accountability Act and kind of got us started down that path. But, you know, I'm thrilled that we've enacted meaningful school choice, and I'm thrilled to see who, not just how many are using it, but who's using it, right? And it's kids that needed a different alternative, right? And they're getting it. And so you're right. We're going to have to continue to ramp up the funding for that program to continue to make it accessible as the income limits come off of it. But I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for Alabamians. I think it's reflective of conservative principles when we talk about competition and free markets. I mean, look, you know, if public education, and some of which is really, really good in the state right now, has competition, then that just makes them better. That makes them want to achieve more. And so I'm excited about ramping up the funding for school choice as we move along, and for the Choose Act. And we've already seen that start to happen. And I think we'll continue to see that happen as we go forward.
But you believe it's because that was the trick last time. Like, well, we're not going to fund it. And that's how they get around school choice. And a lot of my listeners, that's what they say. They say, yeah, sure, you got the Choose Act, but the AEA will prevail. It won't get funded. That'll have a meaningful role in the availability of school choice. But I don't think that's the case at all. Just knowing what I know, I do think eventually this program will grow, and it will be funded, and that will show, you know, to be a real viable school choice program in Alabama.
Well, I think we're going to have to continue to fund it. And I think that's why you send, you know, good conservatives like me that are, you know, very much in favor of school choice back to the legislature to make sure it gets funded. But you're going to see these really positive outcomes that come from kids that are able to utilize, you know, the school choice option and get into programs that are better for them than what they were seeing in their public schools. And look, that's no knock on public schools, right? There's just some specialized areas that you may have a particular private school that's just better at serving that population. And why would a private or a public school not want that child that may have an additional need in this area or that, or excel in this area or that, to not get the best possible education that they could? And so I think that we will see not only a continued push for it from the legislative and the political side of things, and from parents who want to have that choice, and that will be very upset if it goes away, but you'll also see the anecdotal evidence of really positive outcomes for kids and their families. And that's just undeniable.
But you think, like, if we get to a point in Alabama where demand is certainly in demand, that it's going to be funded where it would be a universal sort of school choice program?
Absolutely. I think that, I believe that, and I'm going to fight for that because it's the right decision. And there'll be some market, if you will, equilibrium there, right? Where parents go, hey, I'm happy with my public school. I mean, look, my kids are in public school. I'm perfectly happy, rather, with the education they're getting. But if I wasn't, shouldn't I have an option to go do something else? If my child had some particular need, shouldn't I have the option to go do something else? So I think that there will get to be an equilibrium. It's not going to be a flight from all public schools, far from it. There'll get to be an equilibrium. There'll get to be a pretty solid standard budget number for the Choose Act that we can bake in every year. And as that ramps up, we'll find where that equilibrium is, and we'll keep going.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion here on the program. Speaking of school choice, and the High School Athletic Association The judge there sending this to mediation, that's weird to me that you would tell the governor and the head of the legislative branch, we're not going to do it this way, or we're going to go to mediation. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. What did you make of that from that judge? Senator? We appear to have lost Senator Elliott. Senator.
I'm here, sir.
Did you hear my question?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
Mediation and the judge ordering mediation between the High School Athletic Association and the governor and the head of the legislature, which is the speaker, and not adjudicating this thoroughly. I don't know how I feel about that. It seems like a kind of a goofy call when they went with mediation, but what's your take on this?
You know, I think it's a step that judges use frequently to try to see if the parties can work out their differences. I don't think, based on what I know from both sides, that they're going to work out their differences. And frankly, I think that by the time they get to the point where they the clock may run out on mediation, the legislature is going to have changed the law. And so this might be, a stalling tactic, right?
To get,
until the legislature can just change the law yet again and really show the Alabama High School Athletic Association, look, at the end of the day, the rules of your association do not, cannot, and will not trump the state law.
That's interesting that, because I guess that would have to be something that could be an impediment to legislation in the session would be, well, we're going to wait and see how the court case goes. We're not going to tinker with it. There's an injunction in place, and we'll see. But now that we know that mediation is the judges at least stated preferred route, does that change things? Does that give an off-ramp to say, hey, we're not going to do anything just yet. We're going to wait to see how it plays out in the courts?
I think it's probably the opposite of that. I think the legislature takes the opportunity to say, no problem, we'll mediate this.
Yeah, well, and they certainly have that power, right? They will act. But it's kind of gotten quiet. I guess the last question on that end is, there's no signs that the AHSAA is going to come to the table here. Like, what have they offered to give, or have you heard from these guys? Because the early indications were no, we're not budging. Even when we thought they were going to budge, and we heard this from the Lieutenant Governor, they at the last minute decided not to.
No, look, these guys are going down with the ship. These guys hate school choice. They hate the Choose Act. They think that their rules that they make up on their central committee, Politburo, whatever they call it, trump state law, and that's just not the case. They think they shouldn't be governed by state law, and the legislature is not going to stand for that. Our constituents are not going to stand for that. And so, at the end of the day, they're intransigent. That's fine. That makes my job easier. And so I'm looking forward to the legislative session where we finally get control of this behemoth that thinks that it's better than the laws that that everybody else has to abide by.
Hey, earlier this month, Governor Ivey, she spared Phil and Buster, the two turkeys. And I couldn't help but wonder, the Senate's not going to spare the filibuster in this session, are they? In the spirit of the two turkeys that have been saved.
Yeah, I certainly hope that wasn't a sign for what we do as it relates to rule changes. I really hope that there's an attitude change with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. And that we don't end up in a situation like we did last year. But what happened last year was just untenable, and it is not something that we're going to be able to continue to abide one way or the other. Now, I have a tremendous amount of respect for my colleagues. They use the rules very effectively. They are our rules for them to use, but there also are rules to change if they're being abused, and they were abused last year. And so You know, in this final year of the quadrennium, I expect there to be some changes, and there may be changes moving forward, but we'll have to see how that plays out. It is a process, and one thing that I have learned to embrace since I got to Montgomery was, you know, take the wins where you can get them and value incrementalism, as much as I hate to say that, but we'll see.
Well, just watching it, it was a source of frustration for me personally. And it didn't even feel like the rules that were in place were being fully enforced, because the filibusters weren't like necessarily germane to what was going on the floor. You'd had these two-hour screeds from the minority leader about Elon Musk or something. And if they want to filibuster, that's one thing, but just to use it in the way they did, it wasn't really in the spirit, or even in it wasn't a good practice. It felt like
it was embarrassing. I mean, it was. You listen to the rhetoric, if you want to call it that, and it was off topic. It wasn't worthy of the chamber. It was meant to waste time. That's what it was, and so. I get it, and they will even tell you, and again, I have a lot of respect for my colleagues, they will even tell you, look, all we're trying to do is use the tools we have to waste time so that you can't do what you want to do, which typically is not something they want us to do.
Right.
We're just going to have to decide as a caucus, does that mean we need to change the rules? I think the answer to that is yes. If that's how the other side's going to continue to act, and we use the tools that are available to us to change the rules so that we can legislate and do what what our constituents sent us there to do. And so I think that's certainly an option.
Well, here's what I wonder, and we got to get out of here on this, but if you abuse the rules just enough, then the supermajority is going to do something about that. Do they just believe that you guys don't have the cojones to do this, to actually change the rules? Because that's what it looked like to me. It's like, oh, they talk about that all the time. They're not really going to go through with changing the rules. There's no way.
You know, it's a good question. There are members of my caucus who value their own ability to hold the mic and to prevent things from happening. And sometimes from a very conservative standpoint, there are opportunities for us to do that and to say, hold on, this is not a conservative principle, and I don't want this to pass, and I want the ability to unilaterally stop things from moving. But at what cost? And that's the calculation that we've got to make. At what cost? At what point does that keep so much other legislation, good legislation, for passing, that it's not worth the cost? And that's a conversation we've got to have amongst ourselves and make a decision.
Senator Welch, appreciate your time. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you next week.